Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show.
Purpose, the place where you do what you love to do, solving what you believe to be an injustice or a wrong in the world. Today, my friends, we have a guest who is living out his definition of purpose in a really big way. Bob Dalton, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Thanks for having me.
Bob is the founder of Sackcloth and Ashes, a company that donates a blanket to local homeless shelters for every blanket sold. He's recognized for inspiring local action and has been named a Forbes Changemaker and a CNN Champion of Change. He's an advocate for localism, aiming to inspire people to get involved in their communities through his foundation, Love Your City. Bob, I love your definition of purpose. It's totally in line with the Jailbreak leadership process for helping people identify their purpose in two words. It's the, what's the thing that gets you out of your seat that you just go, that's a wrong in the world. Mm-hmm. And it ties into your skill set, your ability to go actually do something about that. So, man, we're aligned with that one. I love it.
Yeah.
So talk about a little bit about your purpose and how did purpose drive the business here? This is amazing.
Yeah. I started my journey, I would say, you know, sophomore year in high school, I was a part of an organization called Young Life. It's a Christian ministry. And I just had a lot of good leaders in my life from that organization to kind of surround me and support me. One in particular, his name's Todd Tardy. He was a mentor figure of mine and really the first guy that I was like, man, I really want to be like that. You know, he was somebody who loved his community, loved his family, loved God. And he was the first kind of inspiration for me to be like, because I want to be like that, it's not like I dream to be a part of business or build a career or anything. It's like, I want to build my life around giving back. That's where that came from, the roots of where that came from. So at 19, when I graduated high school, I moved to Central Oregon. I'm from the Oregon coast, moved to Central Oregon to Monmouth, Oregon, and there was no Young Life there. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to start Young Life. And so I, instead of going to college, I started this nonprofit sector in Monmouth, Oregon. And that's where I got to learn a lot of entrepreneurial skills of building a team, forming a committee, raising money, calling people on a mission bigger than themselves, and got to be a part of not only building something, but be a part of making an impact in a community and seeing the community transform. We had teachers involved, business owners involved. You know, it was a very collaborative thing. The thing I loved about Young Life was anybody could be a part of it. And so any person that I got to meet with or share the vision with, I could invite them into that vision. And I love that about, you know, that organization compared to a lot of other organizations that I saw was they were kind of limited based off of what they were trying to do. But Young Life was like, hey, come join us.
You know, all takers.
Yeah, you have a role as well. Everyone has a role. And that was a really powerful community for me to be a part of and to develop a lot of my leadership skills in that organization. And so I did that from 19 years old to 24 years old. And at 24, it was time to move on and figure out what was next for me.
So how big did I get? How many people did you have involved?
We had about 100 kids coming week over week to Young Life Club from the high school. And I had a team of anywhere that ranged from about 20 to 40 leaders.
So in your early 20s, I mean, you're running a
sizable
operation.
With my peers,
That's awesome.
You know, and it was just such a special group. Like, you knew it was a special moment in time where I was getting to do life with 20 to 30 other college students that wanted to make a difference in the community. And I remember looking at them all the time and being like, man, these guys are going to go out and do amazing things in the world. And
would you say that
a lot
that,
of them have.
Would you say that mission that you had, was that the big drawing card that people just could grab onto and say, yes, I want to be part of that thing that's bigger than just.
Yeah. Everyone, when I started it and we had our first few meetings, probably for the first 3 to 6 months, I realized pretty quickly, like, we need to build some camaraderie with this group. before we go out and try to accomplish anything.
Who are we?
Yeah, exactly. We were all working through different shit, you know, and our own stuff. And that's when I was like, man, I wanted to just take a season with people my age, but we're all kind of figuring this out, where we're at in life, where we're at with God, where we're at with finding things that are ways that we can contribute. And out of that was a result of seeing this community really come together for kids in the high school and junior high kids. So the Young Life Club for the high school ended up being like anywhere from 50 to 100 kids per week. And then the junior high ended up growing to about 100 kids per week. And after doing that for 4 years, you get to interact with so many different lives and journeys of young adults that are trying to figure out who they are in the world and what they want to do, you know, both with the high school and with the college students that we're leading. And so it just became this beautiful network of relationships where we were all in it to benefit other people in the community. And out of the spirit of that, you know, I look back on that and I feel like I've been chasing that the rest of my career up to this point, is how to construct a team that's so selfless at heart that out of that community, you're seeing lives changed.
Appreciate that. I wasn't until my 30s. I'm a project guy, so I'm about the project team and taking hills, whatever. And actually, when I started my corporate career, I thought work was going to be amazing. For whatever reason, I had all the super lousy summer jobs. But now I got my degree and I got my job. I thought it was going to be amazing because I thought it was going to be like sports, right? You know, run a team, climb the hill, rah, 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 win some, lose some. And it's not, right? It's more of a marathon, endless marathon we're running. But in my early 30s, some magic happened where all of a sudden I'm running a team, which I would call a high-performing team. And it creates that environment, right? We're doing something bigger. We're about each other. And then that becomes like, why can't we do this every time, right? Mm-hmm. So you got that seat set really early. So that's cool. Makes a big difference.
Yeah, so that kind of began my journey in not only understanding that I want to dedicate my life to impact work, but also how to build a team around me, how to build quality people around me to accomplish a mission at hand. And so when I was 24, my mom had gone through a series of events that ended up leading to her being on the streets. And that changed my understanding of homelessness. Homelessness wasn't on the radar for me of a cause that I wanted to help. Up till then, it was like, I want to help kids. You know, there's just so many other societal issues that made sense to me of people that didn't choose to be in that situation. Whereas I viewed homelessness as like, these are people that are kind of choosing it.
Right, their fault.
Yeah, it's, you know, because of addiction or, you know, they're lazy or whatever it might be. But when my mom ended up in that situation, it changed my paradigm because she's the hardest working person that I know. So I started calling homeless shelters and being like, hey, what can I do? How can I help? And they said, we need blankets. And so I came up with the idea that I'll start a blanket company. And for every blanket that I sell, I'll donate a blanket to a local homeless shelter. And I wanted to localize the one-for-one model that had been around for about 8 years up to that point. This is 2014. And localize it to where there's homeless shelters around the United States. So if somebody buys a blanket from me, I'll donate a blanket to their local homeless shelter in their community and give people an opportunity to make a difference down the street from where they live. And so that was the concept of it. And I went, bought a sewing machine and a roll of fabric. And that began my journey of what I called Sackcloth and Ashes is the name of the company, which means it's ancient Jewish symbolism, which means mourning and repentance. So the idea was every time somebody wraps themselves in a blanket, it symbolizes mourning over the homeless population and repentance by contributing to a shelter in their area. It was mysterious enough. It was religious, but it was mysterious enough where I didn't feel like that was going to limit, you know, the vision. And there was this kind of underlining meaning that wasn't just, you know, I'm wanting everyone to become more aware and repent of judgment that they've had toward people on the street. But Sackcloth and Ashes was my journey of repentance. It was my bias and judgments turning into a journey of how can I help a population of people that I used to judge. And I still work through that, you know, judgment. And so Sackcloth and Ashes is like, this is my journey of repentance.
Wow. That's amazing. That's some good stuff. Yeah. It's like many things in life, right? You kind of jump to some conclusion about what something is. And then all of a sudden you actually start to peel it back and learn about it. And all of a sudden you go, oh, maybe I didn't know. I find often my wife's in, you know, the homeless space and, you know, I sit with people and I hear people saying things and I'm like, that's not quite right. I think you're missing a few facts here. You're jumping some quick thoughts about what you think this is based on what you've heard or seen versus actually really knowing what it is.
Yeah. And it's very complex, you know, because it's a national conversation and a local issue. It's a very complex thing because a lot of people end up in that situation for a variety of different reasons. That's why we haven't been able to, you know, solve it, is because it's extremely complex on how people end up in that situation, how people get out of that situation. And there's a whole list of reasons why, you know, people end up in that situation.
Yeah. Every single person's got their own story.
Yeah.
You said something earlier that I'd like to dig a little bit, like how to build that team. Talk about that a little bit. What did you learn? How do you do that? How do you get people to come and go, yeah, let me come alongside you, Bob, and go make this thing happen?
Yeah, from a business standpoint, I really focus in the early years and still do, but we hire based off of belief, not just skill. Because you can teach somebody a skill. You can't teach somebody how to believe in what you're building. And so I look for people that are really about it, you know, about the work at hand, the mission, something they care. You know, and it's not just they're good at a particular craft, you know? So that's what I look for when I've never really done interviews. I've never like put out applications for people to fill out and stuff like that. My team up to this point after 10 years has been networking and finding quality people. I love hiring quality people over just looking for what's their education or what is their skill set, which does matter at a point, but I've had so many people even pivot into different roles, but I've kept them around because they're an incredible person that has different qualities, you know, of like they believe, they're hardworking, they're committed to what we're actually doing. And that puts people in a place where they're constantly learning, and I can work with that, you know.
Right.
And then from a practical standpoint, once you get people on a team, it's really a matter of having consistent conversations where you start to see different roles not performing well. And that's because of one of three reasons. And we've been able to vet out so many different people and just overall the team based off of these three things. Is if performance is dipping, it's because expectations weren't made clear. So that's a leadership thing. Number two is your heart's not in it anymore.
Something's changed.
And number three is you just suck at what you do. And that happens every once in a while. And so you have a conversation when somebody's performance is dipping on the team. To maintain a healthy culture and a performing team, you walk through those three things. And if they say expectations hasn't been made clear, then you lay out the expectations and own it. And then if you have to have the conversation again, you go, hey, we laid out the expectations. Is your heart not in anymore, or are you just not good at what you do? And if it's one of the other two, that's not beneficial for them and it's not beneficial for the team overall for them to stay in that role. And so you got to get to the bottom of that as fast as you can, because what you don't want is just people on your team that have become stagnant, not performing. And, you know, if it's expectations, lay it out. But if it's one of the other two things, you got to pivot extremely fast.
Yeah. And, you know, it could be that, you know, putting the right person in the right seat of the bus is sometimes the issue too. Like you say, maybe you kind of suck at what you're doing, but maybe it's like, hey, you could be great somewhere else in the business.
I love it. I always love exploring that before letting someone go, because it's like, yeah, you want to keep the culture and the team intact as much as you can. And if there's no other role for them, then you obviously don't want to waste resources and waste their time. But I love exploring and getting creative on what other roles do we have. Or what role can we create that could bring potential value to what we're building?
So we were talking earlier before we started recording that you've got people kind of scattered, kind of all over the place. You got manufacturing up in Oregon. You're down here. You've got people in Hawaii, naturally. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the remote aspect of all that?
Yeah, we went very remote when COVID hit, where the team just had more flexibility to go and live and be where they want to be. And so in order to have a really successful remote company where employees are scattered everywhere, we had to streamline communication. Communication is the lifeblood of a company. And in order to do that, we eliminated phone calls, eliminated text messages. So nobody in the company really calls or text messages. And we moved all of our communication to Slack, mostly internally, and email for external communication. You can schedule a call or a Google Meet with someone on the team. You know, when you're collaborating, you need to talk through something. But if we're going to streamline communication, no more phone calls, no more text messages. Because what happens is one of two things. One, it's constant interruption. So if you're working on something and you get a phone call and like, oh, you got 5 minutes, it turns into 30.
Right.
You completely disrupt the workflow, you know, and progress. And then two, it keeps people out of the loop. If I call you, you're answering questions for me, and now we got to fill this other person in. Now we're just wasting time. We could have scheduled a very intentional meeting where multiple people could have been on that call.
People in the room.
Yeah. Had a conversation, addressed everything we need to address. But instead you got, you know, 20 different phone calls happening. People are getting left out of the loop. Communication's not actually getting to where it needs to be. So it's like, schedule a call that has intention or communicate on Slack.
I have never heard this before.
Really? Yeah. I mean, we created something that I just felt like this was going to eliminate all unnecessary communication.
Yeah. Certainly interruption piece is huge.
Yeah. Right?
Because there's studies in regards to how long it takes people to get back to the task that they were on.
Which mostly benefited me, you know, because I get
you,
it up.
You were getting the most phone calls.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. And I'm also creative
at heart. Way to be self-serving, heart. Bob.
Way to go. I'm also creative at heart. If I'm in a creative zone of trying to do something and I get phone calls, it's just constant detour and it messes with your energy. That's the thing that I noticed in myself is if I'm taking calls, stressful or not, it disrupts my energy, my thought process, and my flow. So it really helped when I'm not getting bombarded with communication all the time. And I've kind of created a position for myself where I'm only putting out fires and I'm always there to cater to everybody else. But when you clearly define roles on your team and you clearly define what everyone should be focused on and responsible for, there doesn't need to be a bunch of unnecessary conversation. And so, you know, the collaborative aspect of it is understand who you need to talk to and when. But we eliminated all company meetings as well. And we only have, I think it's only 3 meetings, and we have 1 team meeting every Monday where everyone shares updates of what they're working on so everyone can get a bird's eye view of everything that's going on in the company. And then the rest of the week is accomplish what you need to do for your role.
So kind of almost like the agile approach of like, okay, we got the huddle, get everybody squared away, we got the game plan, go roll.
Yeah, this is not a punch in, punch out type of work environment. There's a lot of autonomy, freedom, but also responsibility. And so do what you need to do, both personally and work-wise, and make sure that you're not going to drop any balls and that you're able to hit what your actual goals are.
Right.
And if you're doing that, I don't care what you do. You know what I mean? But you have to maintain availability during the workday so that you're getting back to people on time on Slack and email and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been an interesting kind of experiment.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, it makes complete sense. It makes complete sense. I mean, even I look at my calendar and I'm frustrated, kind of like, okay, you know, I'm trying to do something, but now something's gotten scheduled. So it kind of takes you out of this. And
yeah,
I find if I'm trying to do something creative, that's a morning task for me. And so I just can't seem to pick up and do that in the afternoon. So trying to schedule my own little, and I don't have people calling me or some big crew. So
yeah.
The thing about trying to do that across a company, that's interesting.
Love that. And to be fair too, for people that are listening, at peak, we've had 30 employees. So it's been very manageable based on the size of a company. And as the company's grown and we went from 10 employees to 20 employees to 30 employees, you know, things shift, communication structures shift, meetings shift. So I'm looking forward to the day where I can operate a multi-hundred person team or 1,000 person team, you know, with or beyond Sackcloth, where I can create new structures of communication. But that's really the thing that's most important for me when you're leading is focusing on what is the most effective way for your company and your community to communicate. If you can get that right, a lot of other things fall into place.
Right, things fall into place. We all know where we're trying to get to. We've got clarity about where we're trying to go. Got that passion, right? We know why we're doing it. And then put the tools in place that we got some accountability and how to communicate, like what you're doing there. Yeah, some magic starts to happen, right? It's good stuff. Talk about the product a little bit. I know you guys have gone a long ways in A, manufacturing in the U.S., right?
Yep.
As well as sustainability of the product. Maybe talk about that a little bit. I mean, what's the philosophy? What have been the challenges? And
yeah, the cool
where's
thing,
that going?
The cool thing about building the company from the ground up is you get to make all of these decisions along the way. And we've done a pretty good job at asking the question in everything we do. How can we do better? How can we improve quality? How can we make a difference? Is there, you know, impact involved in everything we do? And so when I went from fabric from Joann's, you know, we started then buying.
So truly the first blanket was
Joann's fabric. And made by me.
Made by you. Perfect.
And it's questionable on like the made part. It's pretty scraggly.
You still have it by some chance?
I do. Yeah, I got the first one.
Nice.
But we went from that to pre-ordering blankets that were pre-made and getting them shipped to us in kind of the middle stage. And then when we really started scaling in year two, we found an incredible manufacturer in Florence, Italy, who makes fabric. And it's out of Prato, Italy. And it's just a community that's known for making fabrics. And they make quality fabric. They make it out of recycled material. So it starts as t-shirts and sweatshirts, and fabric gets imported. And it starts as scraps, and it gets put into a carding process, you know, it turns into yarn. And it goes through like an 8-step process in Prato before the fabric's even made, because the tassels got to get put on. There's a washing process. There's a quality check. And so when the fabric gets finished, then it gets put onto a container and shipped to our production hub in Oregon. And that's where we cut, sew, label, polybag, and do all of our own fulfillment in our warehouse in Salem, Oregon. And so we have a great relationship with the Italians. We've been doing business with them now for close to 8 years.
Besides, it's fun to go to Italy, right?
It's awesome. Florence is my favorite city. It's such an awesome spot to, you know, Prato is right outside of Florence. And so to make our fabric in like the heart of Tuscany, the heart of where the Renaissance happened, 20 miles away from the Statue of David, you know, you feel like we're creating art here.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, right. Many moons ago, I had a really key supplier for a big project I was working on that was in Italy. It's like, it never hurt to go to Italy, eat some of that food over there. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Talk a little bit about the grander mission. So, I mean, you had this heart, you shared that in the beginning of the podcast, but now I was kind of carrying forward. I mean, you got a million blankets. Let's cover America for the homeless, those kinds of things. So maybe talk about where else you're going with things to continue to drive the business forward.
Yeah, our mission has evolved over the last decade. We're about to hit our 10-year anniversary on June 1st of 2024 is our 10-year anniversary. And so our mission has started with, let's provide blankets to homeless shelters. You know, that was the original goal. And we, even though we still donate blankets to shelters, the mission has evolved from, let's provide a practical product to shelters. But as we started doing that and we started sending blankets around to shelters around the U.S., I started doing blanket drops where I'd visit a homeless shelter in person. I'd invite some executives or influencers in that community to come and do a blanket drop with me, where we get a tour of the facility. We get to meet the grassroots leader, nonprofit leader, and pass out blankets to the folks in the program or the shelter and share a little message with them. And as we started doing blanket drops, it gave me a really a front row seat at some of the best work that's happening in the United States. And so after doing enough blanket drops, you're like, man, we need to get a mic in front of these people. These are true community leaders that are taking initiative in their community and doing something about these problems. And so in 2022, I traveled all around the U.S. and interviewed every week I was on a plane, going to a different organization, interviewing them, and just getting a full bird's eye view picture of what is working, what is happening in the U.S. And so we went from just donating blankets, which was a practical need, to how can we use our platform to highlight organizations that are doing good work, or highlighting people that are doing good work, that are making a local impact. And so this concept of local, even though it was rooted in the early stages of you buy a blanket, we'll send a blanket to your local homeless shelter, that followed me and continued to evolve to where I started to see the need of highlighting people that are making a difference in their local community. And in 2018, when we launched Blanket the United States, which is where our campaign to donate a million blankets, even looking back on that, I would have rebranded it. I wouldn't have launched Blanket the United States, because the campaign in itself is this messaging that Sackcloth and Ashes is kind of the hero of the narrative, that we are going to donate a million blankets to shelters. And when you get to see all of the work that's going on in the United States, you realize very quickly, my company's not solving this issue. My company's not doing much. We're just providing fabric to, you know, shelters in need. But these people are doing the work. And so it really changed my philosophy and the mission of the company overall to being a do-good company and transforming into a company that wants to inspire people to do good. And I think that's the next evolution of business, particularly in this type of community that you're speaking to, is we're moving from a time where, and it was a great step going from just like capitalism, profit-driven, all we care about is success, to we want to do good as a brand or a company. But the next evolution over the next 5 years, the companies that go from, look at all the ways that I'm contributing, to how can we empower people in our network, in our community, our customer base, our employee base, how can we empower them to contribute, to be contributors in their local communities? The companies that figure that out are going to be the leaders in the industry. So there is this shift of, and I'm experiencing it firsthand, where Sackcloth was like, we're going to donate 1 million blankets. We're a do-good brand. We want to contribute to how can we use our platform and our voice to inspire and empower people to do good work in their communities. And that's the next decade for us. You know, that's the next evolution for us as a company. And I think a lot of companies are having these same conversations. I talk with a lot of executives of real estate companies and mortgage companies, and they're all having the same conversations. You know, how can we do more than just our foundation or the company name Cares?
Yeah, it's not just a marketing hype, right? Like, oh, yeah, buy this product because we're good guys.
And that's an interesting part of this conversation is I'm not convinced I actually agree with the current definition of charity anymore. Charity is really a marketing tactic. It's become dimmed down to not actually figuring out what is the most effective way to create change. Charity has been condensed down to a marketing and PR play. And so companies that remain in just the charity part of our company is just going to be for PR, that's not innovative. And you might be liked as a brand, but you're not going to be respected. The companies that actually are asking the question, what is the most effective way that we can create change? And it's not just about PR. Those are the companies that will be respected. And that's the observation that I'm seeing in society by being both a business owner and somebody that has functioned in the impact charity space for a while. That's where it's heading. And I don't want to be left behind, especially with as much as I've been able to observe.
I think you're taking the lead here, Bob. This is good stuff. I mean, everything you're saying, I totally agree. I think too often companies just really want to be able to almost outsource. Like, I can just write a check and make it a marketing hype. But what does that really do for you? I mean, it doesn't really enroll your employees in any bigger way, right? Okay, fine, whatever. I mean, you want to do something where people show up every day and go, man, I'm part of something bigger. We're doing something really unique here, right? I'm inspired to come to work at this company because the stuff we do, what we do is a platform for doing something much more amazing.
Yeah, what's really interesting about this is what we need the most in society overall is public participation. Everyone has
yes,
a role.
Yes.
So you when go. You have the government or foundations or companies acting on behalf of solving our societal issues, I don't actually think it's the role of the company to solve issues. I think it's the role of the company to empower their people to take action in certain ways and to get involved in certain ways. But we've become too codependent on corporations and the government and philanthropic ventures to solve our issues for us. And I think that's one of the biggest obstacles that we're facing right now in seeing progress in these issues is that we are too reliant on everyone else to solve our issues instead of taking individual responsibility. But the reason why people are not participating and contributing is because we have poor leadership that's not creating enough platforms and products and opportunity for people to participate. I think a lot of people want to participate and contribute right now. I don't buy the most people are selfish and most people don't want to take. That's not the people that I'm meeting.
Yeah, feels good to do something, right?
The people I'm meeting want to do something. They want to see change. They're tired of seeing their communities where they're at. People want to participate at this point, but we're not creating enough opportunity as leaders and corporations and government, whatever it might be. We're trying to act as the hero and the people that are going to solve it, which is allowing this entire population of people who want to do something, now they've become reliant and they bitch and complain about things not getting done because you've created that.
Right. And I don't like the solution you came up with, right?
So yeah.
I'm not going to participate.
Yeah, it becomes very politicized. And so I think the companies that figure out how can we be a support, not the hero, how can we be a support to empowering our employees to do something meaningful in their communities? And the companies that figure that out are going to be the leaders. Guaranteed.
I get to experience this kind of firsthand because of the work my wife does, and she's a community developer. And when she was starting to establish her nonprofit in Pacific Beach area, it was like, first off, it's our community. The mayor or whoever is not coming to Pacific Beach to solve our problem. So if we want to fix it, we need to figure out how to fix it. You know, this is our problem. This is our community. How do we enroll all the talent, the knowledge and resources here locally to try and make something happen? So yeah, I get to live with that on a regular basis. And it works. People love to get engaged.
Yeah. And the one thing that I'm working on now is we have condensed down inviting public participation to you can donate or you can volunteer. That's not innovative thinking. That is going to be in the next 3 to 5 years. That will be a way of the past. Just telling people, if you want to get involved, you can donate or you can volunteer. That's not innovative. We need products and platforms that are integrated in people's everyday lives that are allowing them to participate in society on a bigger level. So I've been telling people, as cheesy as it is, the last 10 years I've been focused on the fabric of blankets. And this next 10 years, I'm going to be focusing on the fabric of society. And I want to inspire new products and platforms to be created that's going to allow people to participate. And we don't have to be so codependent on the government, corporations, and foundations to solve our issues for us. It's not sustainable, as we're seeing.
Yeah, one of the things I see, I was sharing earlier that, you know, we got the 5 different organizations, business organizations that support the podcast, right? I'm trying to be the voice for these really excellent organizations with very purposeful companies, right? I mean, you and I know each other from the BBB. They're one of the folks. And just a couple of weeks ago, we had a meeting together to talk about what would collaboration of these groups look like? Because even lofty, high-minded leaders still find themselves in silos. And if we can break down these silos and start to create communication and say, man, how can we just start to play together? I mean, I think the impact would be phenomenal. You know, we got, 15,000 or something nonprofits in the greater San Diego area. We probably don't need one more nonprofit. What we need is a handful of really good ones coming together saying, all right, how do we go after homelessness versus 1,000 different ideas of it? So
yeah,
collaboration. That's kind of been my big mantra here lately. How do we play together?
Yeah, that's really important. And I just gave a keynote message to a real estate company. And I said, if you want to be successful as a realtor, because realtors function kind of as their own individual entrepreneurs, they're building their own brand. If you want to be successful and stand out from all the other realtors out there, create good content, be an incredible communicator, and learn how to collaborate. And the collaboration piece is interesting because collaboration is different than networking. You can go and network and exchange cards and everything. But the people and the companies that can figure out how to collaborate is the most effective form of marketing. And so the people that are a little bit more closed off or they want to kind of fight for their little position in their lane, they're not going to be, ironically, as much as they're trying to protect themselves or whatever, they're not going to be introduced on the level that they would want to if they can figure out creative ways to collaborate. Yeah, and I've been preaching this for the last 5 years. Collaboration is the highest form of marketing by far.
It really takes you back to what you were talking about in the beginning. Team. Mm-hmm. Team is collaboration, right? That's everyone coming together with a common goal, mm-hmm. everybody using their assets and multiplying, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the idea of the small team. How do we create bigger teams, right? How do we get organizations to collaborate? How do we get a community to collaborate? So, yeah.
Yeah, like.
And I know me personally. Best times of my life has been when I'm on a team that's performing and doing well, right? I mean, that's like, you talk about employee engagement and how do you get people to put them on a team that's winning, man, it sells itself.
Yeah, and a practical example for Sackcloth right now in a collaboration is like, we could pay so much money to paying for Facebook ads and like getting our brand name out there and promoting our product. And we do have a budget for that type of promotion. But this last week, I just got back from Nashville where we did a photo shoot with Lauren Akins, who has a huge platform, and specifically in Nashville, to our demographic, you know? And instead of launching a new product collection where it's all new designs, we went to Lauren, who's not an artist or a designer, and we said, hey, pick out four of your favorite blankets, and we're going to style your house with those blankets and do a photo shoot. And then we're going to roll out a new collection, a curated collection that we're going to name. And it's the same products we're already selling on our website, but we're allowing in somebody who has a massive platform, pick out your four favorite. Let's roll it out as a new collection. And we created a new section on our website now, curated collections. And we're just going to start partnering with some of the biggest names in the game and just let them pick out their favorite blankets and style their homes with it and then promote it.
So here's a way for them to participate.
Here's a way for them to participate with it. Yeah, and it also keeps our team having to be like, okay, let's design more.
What's next?
What's next? What's the new styles and everything? Now we're going to be launching new collections from products that we already have on our website. So it's just a creative way to find someone to be able to collaborate with and get creative on, you know, how can we save time, resources, and be able to promote to even more people than just launching another new product and then putting a bunch of ad money behind it. You know, collaborate. That shows you the power of collaboration compared to just...
Right. Me trying to do something bigger and better than the guy next door.
Yeah.
Right? Wow. You're a genius, bub. I love it.
I'm piecing this shit together after 10 years.
Of course. Don't say that. Come on. You know, just go with it. So, you know, the world's kind of crazy. Lots of, I wake up every morning and go, this is the day today that it's all going to implode. What makes you optimistic?
I think that I'm an entrepreneur at heart, so I'm not as much a philosopher where I'm sitting back and trying to theoretically try to paint what the future is going to look like and try to predict it. I'm of the assumption of I have the power to create it. I have the power to create what the future is going to look like. And I don't mean me, but I just mean us. Like, we don't have to sit back and try to predict the future of where things are going. And right now they don't seem like they're going in a really positive direction from a global standpoint, local standpoint. I'm asking the question, how can we create the future? What future do we want? And so for me, my optimism is not coming based off of me sitting back and saying, what is the reality in which I'm going to have to accept for myself, for my kids, for the future? I'm asking the question, what do I need to do to play my role to help create the future that I want to see? And so I'm more motivated than I am pessimistic or optimistic. I'm motivated to create what's next. And so I think it plays into what I'm currently working on right now, which is I'm calling it the Localism Manifesto, and I'm currently writing it. And the manifesto is, there's really three tenets to localism: perception, changing public perception. Right now, the focus is on global media, global wars, global news, global social networks. And part of changing that public perception is helping people become educated on what's going on around me right here in San Diego. And talking about not just the issues of San Diego, but talking about what's working. So changing public perception is huge, and that has to come on a local level. Participation is the second tenet. Everyone has a role, as I mentioned earlier. If we aren't creating products and platforms and having good leadership where we're inviting all people to participate, we will not see progress. And the third is proximity. It has to be done within proximity to you. Empathy is created through proximity. And so you cannot have empathy. It's hard for us to feel empathetic to issues around the world. We become numb to them. But you become empathetic when it's right in your backyard and you're connected to it and you can do something about it. And so those are really the three things that make up localism: perception, public participation, and proximity. And I'm writing this to not just diagnose what localism is, but to paint a future of what things could look like if localism was integrated more into society. And so I share that because that is so important, not just for me, but for everyone to understand that we have to take a little bit more control back, take a little bit responsibility back, and understand that we don't have to accept the reality in which is being currently painted for us of what the future is going to look like, but we have the ability to create the future. We have the ability to be a participant on a local level in something that we actually can change. But right now we're being presented with so many things that are completely out of our control, which leaves people powerless and hopeless. But that's not the space that I function in.
So we're being overwhelmed at the moment. And you know, what you're saying, if I'm hearing you right, is ownership. Take ownership of what you got in your space and step into that.
Yeah.
And go do what you do.
Yeah. And to be clear, I'm not blaming anybody that isn't taking action locally or participating right now or contributing. I think that that time will come for you to do that in the future. But I think up till now, we've had just poor leadership and entrepreneurs that have been in both product and tech that are mostly global focused. How can we build a large company for the global audience rather than creating products and platforms that are going to empower people on a local level? And I think localism will be integrated as a main counterbalance to globalism in the next 5 years. I would like to be a participant in helping bring that forward and inspire an entire new wave of entrepreneurs to start thinking on what those products and platforms will be that will open up the door for the public to participate on a whole nother level.
I'm on team Bob Dalton. I love it. Sounds good. Well, believe it or not, we got to put a bow on this thing. One final question. So we talked for the last 40 plus minutes here. What's the one big idea you want people to walk away with? They didn't remember anything else, Bob. Remember this.
Yeah, this always changes. And I always usually share the first thing that comes to mind. And I think the first thing that comes to mind right now is when I studied past manifestos, Karl Marx created, you know, the Communist Manifesto, and he created all of his body of work. And it was out to answer one question: how can one be free? And that one question drove his entire body of work. And so when I learned that about him and that work and everything, I was like, man, I wonder what my question is. Like, what is the question that's going to drive my entire life's work? And I've been able to boil it down to, what is the most effective way one can contribute? That's the question that I'm going to set out to answer. And you're going to see that question being answered through everything I do and create. And so I would just leave people with that. Like, what is your question? What is the question that you are setting out to answer with your life? And I think it's an important question to know.
Wow. That's an excellent question. I appreciate you coming in, taking the time to be on the show today. Love the work you're doing. Love the story. But even more importantly, I love where you're going. I love the evolution of how things have been evolving for you, and you just keep walking through the doors. I love this next step of localism, and I want to be part of that team. Let's make it happen here in San Diego. Let's start it here first.
Yeah,
we got a small army here behind this podcast, by the way.
For sure. I'm grateful.
Get you engaged in here.
I'm grateful that you had me on and that I am San Diego based. I'm trying to become more plugged in myself on what's happening in San Diego and how I can get involved and how I can contribute, you know, here. This is my city. So grateful to have this opportunity to talk with you.
Well, let's go make it happen, my friend. Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we are all counting on you.